There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1053, July 23rd, 2024. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say, morning has broken, dingo has bitten. Max to Lewis, your love has lifted me higher. And we will rock the boat with Hughes Corporation. We shall explain, gladly. Back to you, sir.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, remember Multiple 21? To be ruthless or not? That is the question. Wow, what a bizarre race. The radio chit-chat was nuclear. How long will Max last in Formula One without a dominant vehicle? And I do want to thank Bob Newhart for a lifetime of fantastic comedy. This week's interviews, ladies and gentlemen, sit down, relax. We got a lot going on. We've got Mark Hughes, we got Freddie Slater, and we got Tuukka Tapanen. Nasser will have all the minute details on that. And just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, yes, we do need those contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, I know this McLaren ordeal kept you entertained for hours on end. We have a lot going on. Max is freaking out. Norris is freaking out. And LCH is just buying another camping chair.
Absolutely, sir. We had a tremendous dog day afternoon in Budapest, and what was snooze fest turned into a scintillating will he not dramatic ending to the Hungarian Grand Prix. At the start of the race, Lando did his best to do a shoomy on Rubinho, on his teammate, but Piastri was slippery and took the lead going into turn one, which was very, very impressive. And poor Max, he had to go off track to avoid Lando, and then he had to do the last thing he wants to do, and that is to give up his position. And throughout the race, that radio chatter between McLaren and Red Bull, that was just beautiful. Now, it is interesting, Piastri is the 7th different race winner this year, and he is the 115th driver in F1 to win a race, and second driver after his own teammate to win his maiden race this season. Interestingly, and this is not good for one hombre, both drivers from McLaren, Ferrari and Mercedes have won a race this season. Red Bull is the only major team where the undisputed numero uno is the only winner. The only question remaining is, why am I not surprised? But sir, before we get into all the excitement of the race, which was really coming alive, I think around lap 40, which I really, really enjoyed. I was confused at time, just like DC and other commentators. Let's take a look at, do a quickie on Collie, as we call it. First McLaren front row lockout since JB and LCH in Brazil 2012. Pole position number 3 for Lando Norris. And this was the youngest front row ever. Lando is 24, Piastri is 23. Max and Carlito, row 2, Max's time, this was interesting, 1:15.273, was awfully close to the pole time set by Lando, which was 1:15.227. So a third consecutive win at the Hungaroring for Max was pretty much very possible. It is very rare these days he goes 3 races without a win. Row 3 was everybody's favorite, LCH and his future teammate, Charles Leclerc. Then we had the green machines of Alonso and Stroll on row 4, and completing the top 10 were the Cash App boys. Honey Badger and the Wasabi Warrior, or shall we call Yuki the Teriyaki Terror. Regarding Checo and Sargeant, all I can say is they are very good at sharpening their own guillotine, and I think this was the second race in a row where Checo was out in Q1 in a Red Bull. Your thoughts on Colli Senor?
Yes, the usual. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I mean, Perez couldn't believe it, but to be out in Q1, wrecking the car, I mean, you could just hear the cash register ringing and the points lacking, and Sergio, I mean, it was almost like he was being set up, so I felt really terrible for him. Sargeant, he makes his own bed every day, not a big deal, but he should be replaced real soon, so it was casual. Once again, the Ferrari's just not holding on, and very disappointed with Aston Martin, so I'm happy that Toto and LCH are now hugging again, and he's back in the fray.
Oh yes. Now, the start was very exciting. I fully expected Max to get ahead of at least one of the papaya cars, if not both, but keeping the pedal to the metal reminded me of René Arnoux saying to me about winning the 1982 French Grand Prix against Team Order by saying, I had the same contract as Prost, so I won my home race and said bye-bye to Prost. So Piastri said later Gator to his teammate, and he went in search of his maiden Grand Prix win in the Magyar Republic. Very, very impressive performance from him. But frankly, I'm not surprised because I followed his career from his junior days. He was very impressive in Formula 3, very impressive in Formula 2, which he won on his in his first year. His pace was impressive. Even Mighty Max could not catch him before giving up his second position to Lando on lap 4. Then the gods of racing hit the snooze button on the Grand Prix, and it became a regular feature that some people complain about Formula One, no passing. Like 700 passes in a 500-mile race is a great deal. But that's another story. But once Max got within DRS zone of his BFF, LCH, you start to get the Carole King beat, I feel the earth move. The battle between the two, from lap 34 to lap 41, when the Mercedes came into the pits, was for me the essence of motor racing. Two of the very best doing what they do best without any argy-bargy or New Jersey-style body slamming. Now, what was interesting, and despite having softer tires and DRS, Max could not easily pass LCH. On lap 35, he briefly got ahead, but then ran wide and the Silver Arrow streaked ahead again. But we all know this cannot go on all race long, given the wonderful history between the two. What did you must have enjoyed as a race fan the duel between LCH and Max in the early stages, to lap 34 to lap 41?
Absolutely. LCH has learned from Fernando, because Fernando has done it at this track to LCH. So LCH is fully versed in what needs to be done to keep these people at bay. And Hungary is... DRS is just not as effective, because it's such a short lap, and there's just so many corners. So, yeah, it's very exciting. It was a lot of laughs, because you could just feel, you know, it was LCH ahead and the pressure cooker behind.
Absolutely, and this pressure cooker is absolutely relentless. Okay, halfway through the race, a McLaren 2 was looking pretty secure, but the watching world had no idea of the drama being cooked up in their cucina. On lap 46, this is where the race got really interesting and exciting. On lap 46, they opened their own can of whoop-ass by bringing in Lando for his second and final pit stop. Piastri was left out on the track with a 9-second lead over Max. Extra lap was very costly for the Aussie mate. He lost the lead to his teammate. Then the team assured Piastri on the road, "We will manage that later." You know, normally I've seen in racing, the race leader basically has the first call when to pit. Were you surprised that they brought in Lando first?
Well, at first I was, but then I was thinking, well, maybe they had the number one status for leading the championship. All the blah, blah excuses where you have a number one and we'll just have to teach Piastri how to be a number two. I thought maybe that they've had that conversation and Lando is going to go for the jugular.
Yeah, and that's when somebody called it the McLaren roundtable conference started between the drivers and pit crew It was hilarious and confusing. First message to Lando was, we would like to reestablish the order as per your convenience. Now, geez, I have no idea what is a racing driver's convenience to giving up the race lead. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Well, obviously he was having a sandwich and a Coke, and they thought, well, you know, after you're finished, if you think about it a little bit, just do the switcheroo. No, the questioning was bizarre. That's why I love the honesty and machismo-ness of the conversation between Max and his engineer, because it's hilarious.
Oh, yes. It's very colorful and, you know, very exciting. Now, we have seen this movie before regarding team orders at Paul Ricard in 1982 between Arnoux and Prost, and in 1981, I believe the race, the Brazilian Grand Prix, was a trio between Reutemann and Alan Jones. Motorsports communication cannot be run on Mother Teresa memos. All those messages about saving tires on turn this and turn that, I am trying to protect you. One day you will need Oscar. I mean, that was too much. Even DC, you know, I was saying, you know, what is going on here? Why can't they be so very clear about it? And, you know, he was asked about him giving up his lead to Mika Hakkinen. You remember that race, I'm sure.
One of my favorites.
Yes. And DC was asked, would you do that again? He said, absolutely not. And, you know, it was the same thing that Reutemann said to me when I asked him about not going by the team order in Rio. And he said, you know, if a driver does that, he is finished. And that's pretty much what DC said on TV also. And I have to agree with him, you know. But what was interesting is, in terms of getting the message clear, Mercedes engine supplier is, now they don't have the GP2 engine. Their engines are supplied by Mercedes. They could have just asked Toto to deliver a simple message saying, Achtung, Lando, you surrender now. It had worked out very well in many theaters in the past, especially on the Eastern Front. Oh dear. It must be something in the Danube water that races here turn into some sort of hot and sizzling goulash, and we see Budapest uprising now and then. And in the closing stages, DC said that this is not a good race to develop relationship between driver and team engineers. And you know, another thing he said, which was very interesting, he said when he was being given orders to let Mika pass, of course, he ignored. And then he said, finally, the team manager, you remember Davey Ryan? He came with orders from Ron Dennis saying that if you don't let Mika pass, you are compromising your position in the team. You know, which means that Monday morning, you will get a knock on the door from the Western Union man with the message, your services are no longer required. But it was a bizarre communication. Okay, another thing I want to ask you, lap 63 was very interesting. I personally, believe it or not, fully expected LCH to get a penalty after his tango with Max. I suspect both will play Rock the Casbah and will clash again many times driving for Red Bull in a red car, because Tigers don't change their stripes as they grow older. Were you surprised LCH got lucky again, which helped him to his 200th podium finish?
He was a lucky guy, but I have noticed in the past, and it'll probably be like that in the future, the FIA is pretty pumped up about handing penalties out until these two come together, and then it's a laissez-faire attitude, you know, and they chalk it up as a racing incident, because I think that's the right thing to do. I mean, first of all, we love it. I mean, we loved it. I mean, it would have been even better if Lando didn't relinquish the position, then it would have been more testicular. I mean, I'm ready for Jean-Marie Balestre to come back. So, no, this is good for the sport. It's good for the fans, because now we have definitive fan bases. Oh, no, this is awesome.
Yeah, and you know, Lewis 200 podium is obviously very, very impressive. What is even more amazing is that Max has 107 podiums after making his debut in 2015. And that is 54% of the races he has been on the podium. So these two are just super machismos. The other question I have for you, after Lando said, tell Piastri to catch up, while he being Lando, pumping faster time than Oscar, I had a feeling Lando was going to do an Arnoux or Reutemann on his teammate. I was very surprised when he slowed down. What were you expecting, apart from first 10 cars slowing down so somebody can win a race for the first time in a decade.
I have to be honest, I was hoping Lando would tell he would become a little maxi and flip everybody off and win the race. It would have been great for the press, for the people, and for Lando's statistics. Just that love fest on the radio. It's for the team. It's for love, peace. You know, this could help Ukraine. Who knows what they were about to say? But that was just a little... It was so PC that I did... The saliva started building up in the back of my mouth. And I wanted to throw up. So, I don't know. It was interesting. And the awkwardness afterwards was... Well, it was awkward. So, I don't know what's happened. But I prefer meanness, ruthlessness, multiple 21 all day long.
Yeah, you know, if he had not slowed down and taken the win, I mean, this would be big news till the start of the Belgian Grand Prix and maybe even more. I mean, we could have a situation like what we had with Villeneuve and Pironi at Imola 1982. And, you know, if this was late in the season, Lando was only 10, 15 points behind Max in the championship, then I can understand that he should win the race. But we still have a lot of season to go. He's over, I think, like three race wins behind. And if he can go and win three, four races and be 10, 15 points behind Max with seven, eight races remaining, then I think Piastri will help him get the championship. I think, you know, when all is said and done, especially in this day and age of social media and instant communication on anything and everything a driver says or a team member says, I think he did the right thing. Bitter pill to swallow for a racing driver, but team harmony is very important. And we have seen what happens when there is two tigers in a cage.
For me, the problem is Piastri comes out, and I think in the back of his head, he's thinking, you know what? The next win is going to be dominant. I'm not going to need help from my teammate. So he's going to be motivated. And Lando, trust me, he does not want to look like a super nice guy because you don't win championships by being super nice. But I could be completely wrong. This could be the new season for Aquarius.
Yes, harmony and sympathy. You know what is really impressive and amazing, and I find it very, very hard to believe, that competition has caught up to Red Bull. They still have the best package and the best driver, but even the best driver need the best car to win a race, as we saw on Sunday. But I'm surprised, and what is even more surprising, I was expecting this from Ferrari or Mercedes, especially with James Allison coming back, but we have a surprise. McLaren is the new machismo machine on the track, so that's good for them, good for millions of Mecca fans around the world, and of course for Zach Brown. He took a lot of flack over the years, but now looks like his troops are marching to the checkered flag, most likely a threat in every race. So that's all very good. Okay, so Piastri becomes the fifth Grand Prix winner from Land Down Under. The last Aussie winner in Grand Prix racing was Daniel Ricciardo at Monza in 2021, also with McLaren. So Norris and LCH completed the podium, Leclerc 4th, Max 5th, Sainz 6th, Perez made it to 7th, which is very good for him. But this is just my personal opinion, if Checo is not on the podium at Spa, I think Dr. Marco will spread some Cinco de Helman Mayo on his contract and we will see Liam Lawson in the car at the next round. But regardless of who is in the car in place of Checo, I am already feeling sorry for that soul. Right now, I do not see any juniors in the F1, F2, or the F3 horizon who can rattle the cage of Max. Corporate America likes to say, it takes a tough man to make a tender chicken, and Max is not going to be beaten by turkeys from Foster or Red Bull Farms. What say you?
Well, I think this is the over-the-cap limits penalty coming back to bite Red Bull. They are limited on their wind tunnel activities, upgrades, and of course Adrian Newey's not that happy. Why should he go, oh, by the way, Max, if you just flip your switch over here, you'll get another 400 horsepower. I don't know. It looks the familia is falling apart over at Red Bull, and it's affecting everything. And Max could be out of there after 2025. So it's going to be interesting. You know that Josh is on the sidelines trying to get him to go to Mercedes. Mercedes is competitive today, but will they be competitive in 2026? I'm telling you, this is a big hot potato. Let me fire up the champagne fountain, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
My name is Tuukka Taponen, and I'm listening F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And right now we're going to invite one of the most respected, well-known racing journalists. When I say racing, I mean Formula One, Mr. Mark Hughes. He's very good in technical matters, and he has been with Motorsports Magazine for a long time. And I've run into him. I see him at the races, but I've run into him in other places. Like once upon a time, I ran into him in the parking lot of the Barcelona Grand Prix track. Next time, I am in the Loo at the Kuala Lumpur airport. We run into each other, and we were on the same flight on an Emirates 380 to Dubai. And the last time I met him outside a racetrack was at a Japanese restaurant at Gatwick Airport. And he's a very nice, friendly guy, and has a lot of information. And it's always fun talking to him. So we had a chat recently. So hope folks enjoyed this conversation. And I thank Mark for his time.
Mark Hughes. Good morning.
Hey, how you doing? Man?
Good to see you.
You too? Long time?
Yeah, long time. Last time we met was 2019 in Abu Dhabi.
Yeah?
I haven't seen the new look.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's a recent thing. That was a winter project that ended up going into the season.
Yeah, but I enjoy your work very much and listen to you on the YouTube and podcast. Yeah. Right? So I want to get your take on Lewis going to Ferrari. Did that come as a surprise to you?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it did. And I mean, for a long time, he just gave lip service to the idea that it would be nice one day to do it. But I didn't think it was happening, really. I just thought it was good.
What really surprised me, how were they able to keep... Everything leaks out in Formula One. Just ask Christian Horner.
I know, yeah. I think it was, from what I understand, he met with Elkin in some holiday resort in much earlier in the year. So maybe May or something like that.
Some exclusive place.
And it was discussed there, but only in principle. Not. Mm. And then Elkin went and started making a serious proposal and getting things in place, just in case, Lewis said, yes.
Yeah.
And Lewis had said at one point, no, I'm going to stay where I am. And so I just thought, yeah. But then at the last minute, he came back and said, yes, I want to do it. So everything was already ready, which is why it happened so quick.
Because
it was already in place, just in case. Because normally something like that would take months. And it had done, but it just,
Here's my favorite question on this. Will Lewis win championship number 8 in a red car before Alonso wins championship number 3 in a green car? The old rivalry.
Yeah. Be lovely to think either one of those things would happen, but I don't think they will.
Not for tonight.
The romantic side of me would like either one of those.
Yeah, it'll be great.
Realistically, although they're still performing at a fantastic level, I think the future's not theirs. So I think it's. I don't think we'll do it in time.
Yeah, it's getting more and more difficult.
Yeah.
Now, in 25, new is gone from Red Bull. Honda goes.
Yeah.
26, Ford and Red Bull Power. Do you think they will win a championship in their first year of collaboration? Or, in what I'm trying to find out, Will Max stay there for 26?
I don't think so. I don't get the feeling he will be there in 26.
No.
And you'll be there next year?
Yeah. He has to if he wants to win a championship.
Well, yeah. Some of his management want him out straight away. They want him there. They want him somewhere else in 25. But even to his father, is saying, no, we're not doing that. So I think he'll be there next year. But after that, no, I think he'll be looking for something else.
Now, Adrian, you're leaving. Do you think it's mostly because, like you said, these things take a long time. Do you think it's mostly because of what happened with the Christian honor situation?
I think not only that, but I think that's triggered it happening now. Because he doesn't like conflict, he doesn't like the atmosphere. He also has a personal conflict because the woman that the case is about was also Adrian's PA, and he's very friendly with her, and his wife is very friendly with her. So he's conflicted in a personal sense, but he also doesn't like, you know, the power structure, the war with Horner and Marco, and that's not Adrian. He doesn't work in conflict.
Yeah.
So I think it's suddenly, he was already thinking, could do with some time off. I could do with just maybe semi-retiring. I don't know, but maybe. And he was thinking that when Christian talked him into doing the new contract last year. I don't know when. Don't know how long it runs for, but it's a few years. And he sort of talked Adrian into it. But then all this blew up, and I think it just made him think. No, I was right. I do want to stop because it's just not. You're not enjoying it. It's not pleasant. Mm-hmm.
In terms of accusation by this girl, do you think that these are based on facts or it's just sour grapes?
No, I think she felt, there's a word for it, I can't remember, there's a legal word for it, but when you feel like you can't respond how you want to respond because this person is your boss and has control over you, she felt constrained by not being able to object to his behavior.
And so the allegations of affairs are correct?
I don't know if they had an affair, but he certainly, with the allegations of sexual pestering.
Okay.
I don't think there was anything more than that. I don't think he touched her or anything.
Yeah.
But just constantly suggesting and texts and, you know, stuff. And just made her feel uncomfortable, but didn't feel that she could. That's my boss. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
And there is a legal case around that. You can. Especially as she was subsequently, suspended, and he wasn't. So
which is kind of strange.
Yeah.
Do you think Newey will go to Ferrari?
You think Newey?
Adrian.
I don't think he's no. I don't think he knows. Yeah.
All right. So it's not a confirmed deal.
There's no deal.
Fred
is pushing very, very hard to make it happen, and had him out to dinner last week in London with their wives, and he's pushing really, really hard. James Vowles is trying to convince
him. Yeah, that was surprising. He has more money than Williams now.
So they're trying very hard to make, but I don't think Adrian is ready to say, to commit, because he's just got himself out of a work commitment. Like he said yesterday, he was interviewed by Martin Brundle, he said, what do you think you'll be doing now? He said, I don't know, I'm just thinking might buy a motorhome and go with Amanda and go down to France. And so he's just thinking, like holiday.
I want to ask you about something you told me some years ago. I think it was in Austin we were talking. I asked you about the Singapore crash date, okay? And I mentioned to you that P.K. Jr. had said that he wanted to talk to his dad, but he was in Brazil. And you said no, and I said P.K. Sr. was in Singapore.
Mm.
Is that right?
No, I think I was probably wrong. I think he was in contact with his dad, and it was his dad who made the suggestion.
Okay, but from Brazil.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I ran into, the guy is very nice, Felipe Massa, at the Daytona. I did an interview with him, and he's very polite. And what he's trying to do, I don't agree with him. There's a statute of limitation in all countries, and, his engine blew up, and he did not finish in Singapore. But he said to me that I had asked, shortly after that he was going to some function, which I'm not sure, with Junior, P.K. Junior in Italy, and he asked him, hey, did he do it on purpose? And he says, no. And he said, I had also approached Brea Torre. But I never believed both of them.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of a strange situation. Your man, Ollie Bearman, is he the real danger man for the competition?
Yeah, him and Antonelli.
Yeah. What do you think is better?
Antonelli.
Really? I mean, I've been following his, you know, I don't follow counting, but sometimes kids do so well, it goes into single seater. So I've been following Antonelli's career from his starting days when he signed with Mercedes. And also, you know, this American kid, Ugo Chukwu, both were very equally good in karting.
Yeah.
But Ugo is now on a slippery slope.
Yeah.
But Kimi Antonelli is just going, you know, like George Russell did or Charlotte.
Yeah. I think he's going to be quite special.
And do you think he'll be in Formula One next year?
Yeah. Might even be this year.
So you mean Sargeant will get the dismissed from the police?
Yeah.
Williams Academy.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting about drivers, because I don't know everybody. I was listening to an interview when he first came into Formula One.
Who saw them?
Yeah. And I interviewed him when he was karting, and he was living in Lausanne, and he's from Boca Raton. Mm-hmm. If you're from Boca Raton, you have money.
Mm-hmm.
If you're racing in Europe, you have money.
Yeah.
And if you're living in Lausanne, you have a lot of money.
Yeah.
Simple as that. But he, in that interview, it sounded like that, you know, he was running out of money, and Carlton helped him get the drive, then I find out whose uncle is, and the guy is heavily loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And but it'll be a shame if they, I mean, he's not performing, that's for sure.
No, he's not. We need an American megastar.
We need
somebody really shit on.
Like Kenny Roberts, you know.
That's the thing. Yeah. Really, really switch it on.
That's, you know, there is this one American kid. I think he's maybe not as good as Kimi Antonelli, but he's right there. Have you heard of this kid named Nikita Johnson?
No, what's he doing?
He's doing USF Pro 2000. He's not even 16.
Okay.
And he lives 20 minutes from where I live
in
Tampa.
Yeah.
So I met him and he's got very nice people. The kid is very talented. Mm-hmm. And GB3, or maybe, how old do you have to be in GB4? 16?
16.
Okay, he's going to do GB4 as soon as he turns 16, which I think is happening in a month or two. So keep an eye on this kid.
Okay.
Very, very good.
In Europe? He's going to Europe?
Yeah, he's going to race. Then everybody wants to go to Formula One.
Yeah.
But this kid is very talented. Just like, I would say, I was sold on Alexander Rossi because I've known him for many years. He was very talented. Mm-hmm. Still is. I think this kid is even still ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So, Nikita Johnson. He's named after some Russian hockey player.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
He told me, so he's a good prospect for the U.S.
Right.
But,
excellent.
And if one last question. This F1 Academy,
Is
this, as somebody says to me, this is a marketing ploy with cute girls, pretty girls.
Well, they're not all pretty, but
Well, thank you. So we have two things in common now. A couple of them are quick, like Dorian Pain and Abby Pullin.
Dorian Pain is very good, I think.
And Abby Pullin too, I think.
Yeah.
Right? But, you know, I don't think they can race with Kimi Antonelli.
But I think if something like this can find somebody that is good enough to compete at the front in Formula 2, Formula 3, but then gets behind them and backs them, then that's the only way it'll work.
Yeah.
Just win a championship against other women, fine. At least you're getting experience. But I think, I don't think there's any physiological reason why you can't have
it's just successful. I think it's a numbers game.
It's numbers. It's just the entry level.
Yeah.
And it's, I think, my brother works as a coach in there, and he was a coach in W Series as well. And just waiting for the right one, so it's not. But, and I did a lot with Kyle Alexander on it, but he's no longer around.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what's excellent. Sounds good.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, mate. Take care.
Mark, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Okay, Nas, let's bring in Freddie Slater.
Yes, sir. So we go from an English journalist to an English driver, Freddie Slater. Freddie and I met at Mugello. He was racing in the Italian Formula 4. Now, he is completely dominating the series, a very young driver, very good, and he has been approached by several racing programs from Formula 1 team, and he has told all of them, thanks, but no thanks. And so that's very good. And there is what happened last few years, I don't watch a lot of karting, I just don't have the time. But you know, when Kimi Antonelli was making such a big name in karting, I started following, and a couple of names were coming up all the time. His name, this kid from New York, Ugo Chukwu, who was also at Mugello, by the way. And another name that was coming up a lot, especially winning, was Freddie Slater, and this kid is very, very good. So I think he's going to go Chris Bourbon style all the way. So I thank him for his time. And one thing very interesting. He's with Prema team. And now, this is Formula 4. They want me to submit the interviews, the questions, and they will send it to the team and get the approval. So I had no choice but to do it. And she very quickly sent me an email early morning, not early morning, but 9 o'clock, but giving me like 15 minutes. I got the approval, come on down. So I go there. And she said, you know, the approval was very easy because my boss knows you. And this was the gentleman who helped me do some interviews last year at Monza in Italian Formula 4. So our reputation is getting there in a positive way. So that's very good. So please enjoy this conversation with this very young, talented driver from UK, Mr. Freddy Slater. Okay, folks, I'm here with one happy chappy, fast Freddy Slater. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Yeah, really good, thank you. How are you, of course? Obviously, it's been a great weekend so far and a great season so far. We're getting to the halfway point, so still a long way to go. And, we've just got to keep my head down and focus on the job I'm doing.
I'm doing very good, as always, on a race weekend. Thanks for asking. You are a winning machine this season. 7 wins out of 10 races, or has that improved since yesterday? Has this come as a pleasant surprise, or was it all pre-planned?
Yeah, you don't expect it. You just try your best. And at the moment, we're doing our best. And we put so much preparation in the winter with the team, my management team, my coach, and etc. We put it all together. And that's what's given us that leg up in the championship at the moment. So it's just all come down to preparation before race weekends in the winter, which has made us stronger today. So, that was the key to the success at the moment.
You won all 3 races at Vallelunga. Tell us about the weekend, and is this the best weekend of your racing life so far?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we had a great weekend at Misano, the first race weekend of the year. But also, obviously, Vallelunga was mega. We have mega pace. So it's kind of, there's a few weekends where I probably learnt more than others when certain races happen. I think Vallelunga was quite strong. But yeah, there's key moments that I've learnt from, let's say. But I can't really choose a favourite one yet.
You are with Prema team, a very successful team. On their website, it says you started racing at age 5. What got you interested in racing at such a young age? And is the interest in motorsport coming from daddy?
Yeah, my dad used to race, and then I was the first child, and I kind of just fell in love with it as soon as I saw an engine or anything like that and watching my dad race. So I knew when I was about 7-8 years old, it was something that I really enjoyed doing. And at that time, it was a hobby. And then I got to 10-11 years old, and I kind of thought this could be a career. So, I've loved it since I was 5 years old and probably before that as well.
Okay. Last year, you did some single-seater races. How was the adjustment from karting to single-seaters? Easy, or it took some time to get up to speed?
No, definitely it takes some time. You definitely have to get the process right. I think, obviously, it's so much bigger than a go-kart. You can't throw it around as much. Like, obviously, a go-kart, there's no suspension, so the car doesn't move around as much. So it's quite a bigger transition, but I think we put the right preparation in place to get the best possible results as quick as we could, which we showed good pace when we came into some of the races we did last year. So yeah, it's definitely hard, but it's something, it's made me better now.
Okay. Like Lando, you also won the Ginetta Junior Championship with more than a dozen wins. What were the best moments from that season?
I think obviously getting the 1-2-3s with the team, I think that was something really special. I think obviously all the cars were fast enough and all the drivers were fast enough. We just all had to put it together at the right time, and it was quite nice to get that domination between the teams and the paddock, because I know there's quite a fierce rivalry. So yeah, it was obviously mega. I think that was probably one of my favourite moments, is getting a 1-2-3 for the whole team.
In 2019, you won the Scusa Pro Tour. What are your best memories from this championship, and what was your impression of American karting scene as compared to karting scene in Europe?
Yeah, it's quite interesting, to be fair, because I feel like the American racing feels a bit more, you have a bit more fun off the track. You see the sights, you see this. When you go to Europe, you don't really explore the world as much. Obviously, America is quite a long way away, so it's more of a travel there, and it makes it a bit more fun. But obviously, the racing is pretty intense. There's a lot of good drivers out there. Obviously, I love both racing. To be fair, the racing is pretty similar, but I think you just have a little bit more fun off track in America. But no, I love both.
Among the drivers you have raced against in karting, who impressed you the most?
That's a very hard question. I can't actually think of one. There's so many that I've had to race differently in multiple categories. Obviously, I think as a general, when I did KZ2 in 2023, I think that was a hard year because there was a lot of experienced drivers that were clean racers but also hard racers, so it was quite hard to come from juniors and seniors to adapt to that racing, which was one of the challenges of going into KZ2. And I think that was something that I definitely, it's made me better now because I've had that experience against really good drivers. So I'd probably say as a general, I'd say the KZ2 and the KZ class has been probably the hardest bunch of drivers I've had to race against.
Your favourite karting and motor racing track, and your thoughts on the Macau circuit, which I like very much?
Yeah, Macau's my favourite track by far. I think Macau and Brands Hatch GP is probably my two favourite tracks, and I'm hoping to be going back to Macau soon, hopefully this year, but you never know. But no, I was actually really sad when I left it last year, and I just can't wait to go back. And just that feeling of doing that one lap in quali is just an amazing feeling, and you won't know it until you do the lap.
How important has been the role of ADD management in guiding your career? I believe Lando Norris is with them also.
Yeah, Lando's with them. It's been crucial, honestly. It's when they joined me at the end of 2020 into 2021, they've been a massive part of my career. The focus points that we work on is so clear, and it's not something I don't need to be focusing on. It's stuff that is to do with me and not around the team, you know. So my job is to deliver the results, do well, etc. And my job is not to worry about the team, etc. And they take care of all that sort of stuff. So they've been a crucial part to my success, and I, to be honest, I wouldn't be here without them. So a massive thank you to them, really.
And what part of England are you from?
I'm from the Midlands, in the UK.
Three great drivers from jolly old England in Formula One. Who is your favourite?
Three in UK?
Yeah, you know, Lewis, George, and Lando.
Obviously, I think Lewis has got to be one of the greats, isn't he? He's probably one of the best there's ever been. He probably is the best. Him being able to kind of dig it out whenever he needed to, especially his race pace, is obviously mega. And seeing him win at Silverstone was obviously really, really great for the UK. But also, I'm rooting for Lando. Obviously, he's in the management team. So, yeah, it's good to see him at the front now, obviously fighting for wins. And also, he's a great guy. Like, off the track, he's good fun. Plays golf, which I like playing golf also. So, yeah, he's a bit closer to my age. So, it's probably a bit more fun to play with him and stuff and go out with him.
Appreciate your time. And thank you, man. One last question. Would you have a message for our listeners that you can tell them about your social media so they can follow your career?
Yeah, obviously, I'd love everyone to follow me on social media. I'm on YouTube and Instagram, just Freddie Slater 27. And yeah, just thank you to everyone for supporting me through my career, and hopefully I can keep it going and keep everyone happy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Freddie, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now for our last interview, Nasser Tuukka Tapanen.
Yes, sir. Tuukka Tapanen, as the name will tell, he is from Finlandia. And I remember asking Mika Salo one day, if you guys have a factory to produce very good racing drivers. So they always have drivers coming from Finlandia who are very talented. And this is another kid who is very talented. He is in the Ferrari Driver Academy and is doing very well. He is racing in Formula Regional Europe by Alpine Freca, as they call it. And this is basically the advanced version of a series which was known as Formula Renault Euro Cup. And of course, Alpine Association means they are, at least for now, being supplied by Renault engines. So this is a very talented kid, nice, friendly kid. And you know what was so interesting? One of the guys who's handling his affairs, I spoke to him first and he looked familiar. And I said to him, what is your name? He goes, Aro. And I said, are you Aro Vainio? He goes, yeah. I said, well, I interviewed you when you were in GP3 some years ago at Silverstone with Mr. Brazia. So it's a small world, you know, but I'm glad that we're making some contacts. And now that I have time on hand, we can expand on these. So with that, please enjoy this conversation with Tuukka Tapanen and we shall return.
Okay, folks, I'm here in beautiful but very hot Mugello with one very hot driver from Finlandia, Tuukka Tapanen. Tuukka, good to meet you. How are you and how was the day so far?
Yeah, thank you for this opportunity. It's been a hot day, really hot day. Probably 40 degrees in the sun, so it's not an easy weekend. Yeah, so far this day has been quite good. We tried different things and I think we are quite happy how the qualifying pace is. We need to adjust our car a bit for the long run, but that's after qualifying, so first we need to target to do a good qualifying, because if you don't do a good qualifying, the race will be much more difficult.
Last year you raced in Italian Formula 4. How would you rate your season on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best?
Last year, so I did 2 championships, I finished 2nd and 5th. I would rate the season 8. It was not what I wanted from the European Championship, from the European Tour, but it was really good in UAE, so I can be quite happy for that. But anyway, yeah, 5th wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it's still okay.
What were the highs and lows of the season?
Yeah, as I said, the UAE Championship was the highs.
Any particular race?
Yeah, I mean, the whole championship was good, but there was a 1 weekend where I did 2 positions and 3 race wins, so everything maximum. That was really, really cool. And yeah, also I had some highs in European Tour, in Italian Championship. I did a really good end of year from my side. Even start of the year was pretty strong, but we struggled a bit. So anyway, as I said, it was a quite good year, but not exactly what I wanted.
Okay. This season you are racing in Formula Regional Europe, as they call it, Freca. What is the main difference between F4 and Freca cars?
This is a quite a lot heavier car than F4. So the driving style is a different. You start to have quite a big aero balance in the car, so you can really use the downforce already. And yeah, so I think the biggest difference is in the corner speed. Obviously it's going quicker in the straights, but yeah, the way you need to drive is a bit different.
You are in the Ferrari Driver Academy. The Prancing Horse logo looks good on your t-shirt. I have 2 questions on this. 1, who made the first approach? Did your management call Maranello and told them Tuca is the next Mika, or did they approach you?
They approached me 2021. Ferrari usually organizes camps, like a scouting camp. So I got chosen to that camp, and I did a good job on that camp, but I didn't get chosen to the academy 2021 year. But they told that they're gonna keep an eye on me, and I knew that sooner or later I will be in some academy, so I wasn't in a worry about that. And yeah, more or less 1 year later, they chose me into the Ferrari academy, and it's been a nice to be in this academy, and this is my 2nd year, so they are teaching me a lot off track as well as on track. Usually on this let's say academy, they want to prepare as much as possible all the things that happens off track, so physical training, mental training, Italian lessons, so we try to speak Italian as well.
Well, it will help in picking up Italian chicas.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, the other question I have is, who makes the decision on what series and which team you go with, the driver or the FDA?
It was everybody's decision. There were obviously, we are always looking for a top teams, and our target is to be always in a top team when we are moving up to different category, and this means you need to do a good results. And last year's results were quite good, and our decision all together, Ferrari, my management, me, was to join RSGP, and so far I'm more than happy to be in this situation.
Great. Finlandia has produced many great racing and rallying champions. Did you have any interest in rallying?
Obviously, I watch rally, but it's been always in our road cars.
Is it racing interest coming from family, or is this your own agenda?
Yeah, my father was driving kind of a rally in Finland. Not rally, but it's a bit, let's say, Scandinavian motorsport. And when I was a kid, my father bought me karting. And since that, I have started to drive. And yeah.
Okay. Your thoughts on the recent final laps of the Austrian Grand Prix?
Of Austrian?
Yeah.
F1.
Yeah.
I don't want to say any comments about that. It was a really interesting race, but yeah, for the crash, I don't want to comment anything.
No, I understand, but it was interesting. Yeah. Okay, now speaking of Finnish great racing drivers, who's your favorite, Mika or Kimi?
I prefer Kimi. He's the latest Finnish driver. obviously Bottas is still doing, but he won the world champion 2007, so with Ferrari, so he's one of my idols as well, and his person is a different than too many others, as I think quite many Finnish guys are like that, a bit more quiet and calm comparing some others.
I'm glad you like to talk. Okay, your favorite karting and motor racing tracks?
Did you ask karting?
Yeah, karting tracks and motor racing. Please.
I think in karting, my favorite track is Portimão. And in Formula, there are many good tracks. But I would say Monza is still a nice track, even it has
good man.
Even it has a long straights. Monza is really nice for the racing, and in the end, it's not an easy track. Many people think it's easy. There are straights and chicanes, but because you are so fast into the corner, so you need to nail the braking and all the exits from the corner. So I quite like Monza.
Great, my favorite track. Okay, now, what part of Finlandia are you from, and who has been the biggest influence in your career, from a family member or a racing hero?
I'm living close to Helsinki, so in the south. My biggest supporter since I was a kid has been always my family. They put me a lot to the karting track when I was really, really young. And then at some point, my manager, Jussi, became, and without him, I would have not been at this point, so he has been supporting a lot, and yeah, he has a good karting experience, so he was helping me a lot in karting. But now when I moved to Formula, also Aaro Vainio, who was a old driver, he's traveling with me now and trying to help as much as possible me as well as the team in every situations. And yeah, I have a good guys behind me.
You know, Aaro Vainio, I interviewed him when he was in GP3. So it's a small world. Okay, I thank you so much. Will you please, we have listeners all over the world, including your country. Will you please tell them about your social media, how they can follow your career?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram with my name, Tuukka Taponen. Also in Facebook, I have an account, Tuukka Taponen. And website also, tuukkataponen.com. So in all those places, you will find me. Thank you.
All the best.
Tuukka, keep up the good work. Nas, back to you.
Okay, sir, in other racing news before we go into Magyar moments, Colton Herta won the IndyCar race in Toronto. There was a big crash fest there. Everybody's okay, so that's good. And this was his first win in over 2 years. And he drives for Andretti's team. And our favorite, Pascal Wehrlein, won the Formula E World Championship. The final race took place in London. So he's now happy. And once upon a time, I'm sure you remember, he was in Formula One. And he's a very good racing talent. So that's what's happening in the other series. So now, sir, we're going to go back to Formula One because we like it so much. We're going to look at some moments in Magyar. Magyar is the Hungarian name for Hungary. The very first race in 1986 behind the Iron Curtain provided an incredible pass by Nelson Piquet of all the people on his compadre Ayrton Senna. Piquet's Williams slipping and sliding and him still taking the lead is one of the greatest passes one can ever wish for in Formula One racing. If you have not seen it, it is highly, highly recommended and you will not be disappointed. As they say, satisfaction guaranteed. Machismo got his first win here in 2003 by lapping Michael Schumacher on the day of the expanding Michelin tire. Close but no Havana or Hungarian cigar for Damon Hill. His arrows broke down on the final lap for what would have been an incredible victory for that team. Mr. Rogers, I was watching that race live. It was a bummer. Jacques Villeneuve won the race. Were you watching this race live in San Jose?
I was watching the race because I was a big Jacques Villeneuve fan. Renault, Williams. Oh, the memories.
Of sentimental verse, nothing in my purse, and chuckles when the preacher said, for better or for worse, how lovely it was.
Now, JB got his long-awaited maiden Grand Prix win in Magyar Republic with Honda in 2006, and I will never forget his bulging eyes, you know, when he got out of the car and he still had his helmet on. So that's a good memory from that race. In 2007, which you don't remember, that's okay, we had the day of the expanding ego and attitude. The goulash was well done in the 2007 qualifying session. Need I say more? And sir, the most successful driver at the Hungaroring with 8 wins, everybody's favorite, Lewis Carl Hamilton. Okay, sir. Now, you know, there are ills with any advancements in science and technology, and same thing with social media. But one advantage of social media is people who do post some interesting information. Sometimes it's funny. Here is some information posted on Facebook. It is a comparison between Sunday's McLaren victory to the last victory at Parco Monza. Both share the following. Interesting. Team orders in both races. McLaren 1-2 in both races. Lando Norris second in both races behind a driver from Australia. In both races, Mercedes third and Leclerc fourth. In both races, Pierre Gasly first, the first DNF. So this is very interesting how people can connect, you know, hip bone is connected to that bone, or you know, however that song goes. Sir, before we go on to famous last words, any final thoughts you may have on the Hungarian Grand Prix and, of course, your favorite question, who's going to win Spa?
Well, once again, the radio chatter was just so hilarious. We even had good chatter from Fernando and Machismo, who was sort of frustrated as well. It was a very frustrating day in Budapest for a lot of drivers, including Haas. You know, the only guy that's out there driving around doing a pretty good job and really doesn't really give a damn is Lance Stroll. I think he's the most relaxed driver out there. He's got job security. He doesn't really have to do anything. And he's got a lot of money.
You know, I was not going to bring this up, but since you said Alonso and on the team radio, DC's comment was, he is still petulant even in his 40s. But you know, to each his own. Okay, sir, now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Max Verstappen, who did not have his usual dominating day by the Danube. On being told on team radio he needs to see, this was beautiful. On being told on team radio he needs to see medical delegate after the race, Max showed his frustration by responding, and I quote, "We can send the medical delegate to the steward's office so they can look at them," end quote. A lot of truth in that, to be honest with you. Okay, but sir, here's my motorsports mantra. Max's tirade on the team radio is getting a lot of media attention. He has some choice words on that also. Most of the time they start with F, which we will not get into. But as we have discussed before, if Max has any shortcoming or weakness, that was on full display on Sunday. He gets flustered very easily. With the tremendous lead he has, he can easily afford to have a DNF in a race or two and still win the championship with authority. All the other greats, notably Senna, Schumi and Hammy, had bad hair days. But Max's performance on the team radio on Sunday is the primary reason, and this is just my humble opinion, that Daniel Ricciardo should have stayed at Red Bull, at least for the competitive car, which later became super uber dominating for a season or two. He would have had a chance to win a lot of races, and with some lucky breaks, maybe a championship, which was never going to happen with the yellow Kursk, the Russian submarine, if you remember. So that's the mantra from Macer. If you don't have anything, we would like to say auf Wiedersehen, and we shall meet again at Spa-Francorchamps, the Garden of Eden of motor racing.
Keep up the good work, NAS. The check's in the mail. I want to thank everybody who listens. We'll talk to you next week. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Attention. Attention. Flint has escaped. Find him. Find him.